Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, April 25th, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Road signs erected by ZANU-PF during its December 2014 Congress in Harare have been reportedly pulled down, with the Harare City Council professing ignorance on their removal.
They just disappeared. I think the angry residents did it. Most people were not satisfied with the naming of those streets.
Some Zimbabweans living in exile in various countries are optimistic that one day they'll go back home when the socio-economic and political situation improves.
I don't think I'll go back home. I know that I'll go back home. It's the timing that will determine when I go home.
And xenophobic attacks in South Africa threaten the spirit of Pan-Africanism. Stay tuned for more details. Road signs erected by ZANU-PF during its December 2014 Congress in Harare have been reportedly pulled down, with the Harare City Council professing ignorance on their removal. According to the Zimbabwe Independent, the removed signs were inscribed Dr. Grace Mukabeway, Congress Road and Kutsaru Jinji. Deputy City Mayor Thomas Mazuba tells reporter Chonga Kandemiri that it could be some residents who were against the street names who may have removed the signs.
They just disappeared. I think the angry residents did it. Most people were not satisfied with the naming of those streets.
Has ZANU-PF approached you over this issue?
No, they haven't. I think they are dealing with their Congress issues and maybe the factionalism in their party. They have not yet approached us.
We understand that the council had approached the Minister of Local Government, Mr. Ignatius Chombo, over this issue. Is this true?
Yes, this is true. It was the mayor who wrote to the Minister of Local Government showing disgruntlement over the naming of those streets. Those residents were complaining.
May you explain what should be done for one's name to be on a road sign?
Whichever group thinks of naming a street, they have to approach the council. Then the council, through the Environmental Management Committee, will sit and recommend to full council over the naming of any street in Harare.
That was Harare Deputy Mayor Councillor Thomas Mazuba in Harare, speaking with Studio Service reporter Chonga Kandemiri. We failed to reach ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo or his deputy Psychology Mazibisa as they were not responding to calls on their phones. Some Zimbabweans living in exile in various countries are optimistic that one day they will go back home when the socio-economic and political situation improves. One of the exiled Zimbabweans is former Matabeleland South Provincial Administrator Angela Stube, who tells Studio 7 that a lot went wrong soon after independence in 1980.
For us, independence was the best thing that happened to us. We all looked forward to it. We think that it started quite well, but somewhere along the line, we lost the way. In terms of when we started at independence, I think we had high hopes and everyone was optimistic. Both internally and externally. We saw a lot of people return to Zimbabwe. We saw the ZIMCOD conference. We saw the talk of the leaders about forgiveness, about reconciliation, about building Zimbabwe as one. So that gave us high hope.
What went wrong, Ms. Dube?
I don't think it was perfect. I think for me, the greatest tragedy that first befell us was Kukurahundi. I feel that things could have been talked through. People could have worked together. There was no need to act at that level, really, especially considering the civilian population that perished within that. And I think that did erode a lot of goodwill. It created divisions within the country in terms of understanding. And some people felt that, yes, it was the right thing to do, and started bringing up historical issues which were necessary. But I think it wasn't a war situation. War was declared on civilians in the end. In effect, that's what happened. In terms of development, I think we again experienced skewed development. There was skewed development in Matabeleland and the dissident issues were used to justify why there wasn't that level of development. So for the first 7 years, Matabeleland and the Midlands lost out, and we never got the time to catch up. And eventually, when the resources ran out for development, we were left worse off. We're trying to use a colonial infrastructure, a colonial system, a colonial setup to meet an independent Zimbabwe. And 35 years on, that is just not workable, it's just not tenable, and it's not producing results. In fact, we are regressing.
So now, when we look at issues that are a little bit personal, do you think that one day you go back home?
I don't think I'll go back home. I know that I'll go back home. It's the timing that will determine when I go home. There should be certain things that should happen, which I feel, in my view, would imbue me with confidence to want to return home.
What are those issues?
Yes, I think the first one is the respect of the rule of law. I think what needs to be fixed is the power and governance issues. People must feel free that they are part of Zimbabwe and that they can contribute without being labeled as traitors, as enemies.
That was Angela Stube, an exiled Zimbabwean and former Matabeleland South Provincial Administrator, speaking with Studio 7 from London. Xenophobic attacks in South Africa have dented the image of the African continent, with some critics saying the violence threatens the concept of pan-Africanism. But others say pan-Africanism, which has often taken the shape of a political or cultural movement, is not under threat at all. For perspective, we reached Sabelo Sibanda, a member of a community group Upondo, and Diana Zimbutsana of the Zimbabwe Exiles Forum. Sibanda, who's also at the School of African Awareness, tells Studio 7 the violence will bring Africans closer. It seems as if with all this Afrophobia or xenophobia, you know, pan-Africanism is dead.
You're right. It seems as though it's dead. Now it's very much alive, my brother. And we are using these particular incidents as one of the ways to not only show that it's still alive, but to revive its significance to the generality of the global African nation.
Ms. Zimbutsana, pan-Africanism dead and buried, right?
No, it actually hasn't died. In fact, now that this whole issue has come to the fore, we can then come together and say we are Africans. South Africa is part of Africa. It cannot remove itself from its geographical location. And that being the case, it cannot then remove itself from the spirit of Ubuntu. So pan-Africanism is going to be rekindled afresh, because even the diplomats, their conversations with their South African counterparts are going to change. They're going to be asking each other, now when you say Ubuntu, and that word is written all over, tell us what it means. So yes, pan-Africanism is back, and it's going to be more alive and more kicking.
And that leads me to something else here, Mr. Sibanda. You know, there were some people were posting messages saying, you know, South Africa regards itself as South of Africa and not South Africa. Just your take on that.
That's very true. You hear some people when they are going to Zimbabwe, black people, black South Africans, saying to you they are now going to Africa. And that's an idea that has been instilled by the West for its own particular interests, and a lot of South Africans actually believe it. But through the pan-Africanist interventions that we are working on, we are revisiting that, and we are getting into communities and getting the communities to discuss some of these things, and also using the performing arts, because we have found the performing arts to be a very effective tool to re-engage and get people to understand the oneness of African people and realize that this whole conceptualization of South Africa being independent of the rest of the continent is a simply fallacious idea which can never be sustained and which will leave South Africans, particularly black South Africans, totally isolated if they try to run with it as we are very, very strong and pushing for the oneness of the global African family and therefore the unity of the global African family.
Ms. Mbotsana, your take on that?
In fact, it's not just the ordinary South African who's a little bit confused about where South Africa stands. It also includes the politicians. That's why South African foreign policy itself is watchy-potchy. It's not really clear what they want. Do they want to stick with the rest of Africa, or do they want to then align themselves with the West? So it does need a lot of edge, including the politician who has got to understand that, yes, they've got a better economy, but geographically, they are in Africa. They are part of Africa. We are together. We are all the same. So whatever happens to us in Zimbabwe, we have got every right, legitimate right to come here to South Africa and seek assistance because they are our neighbors and we are in the same continent. So they've got to understand that aspect and realize that that aspect of being African is what should actually unite us and not divide us.
And how do you turn around that, Mr. Spanda, to make sure that some people understand really what South Africa is all about?
A lot of people pick this thing up from the surface, if I can put it that way. We have to go back to the liberation struggle. You find that during the days of the liberation struggles across the continent, the whole idea of Africa being one was not an issue. Everyone knew that Africa has to be free. And with South Africa being the last bastion of white domination, everyone put their efforts around the liberation of South Africa. Everyone put their energies into ensuring that South Africa would be free. And now, without that knowledge and taking it forward and saying, okay, South Africa is now free and South Africa, with its freedom, can try to distance its way away from Africa, that can never, ever work. And that is why we need to also note that South Africa does not even consider itself free. They don't talk about freedom. They don't talk about independence. They just talk about democracy. They talk about the age of democracy now. So they also accept that they are not in control of their own reality. They're not in control of their own situation. And for that reason, it becomes necessary for us to come in as Pan-Africanists and begin to instill the right thinking and the right knowledge and the right awareness of what exactly it means to be an African and what Africa means to all of us as African people.
Ms. Zimbuzana, can I conclude there?
They must be appreciative of the fact that the rest of the African continent played a crucial role in making sure that South Africa gets liberated. If you check... South Africa is one of the few countries in Africa that doesn't even celebrate Africa Day. Why don't they?
That was Diana Zimbuzana of the Zimbabwe Exiles Forum. You also heard from Sabelo Subanda, a member of the School of African Awareness, speaking to Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America.
Now it's time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum,
a forum where we look at issues
affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mplanga Nyahuye. Today we have the pleasure of speaking to Mrs. Ekenia Chifamba, the founder of Shamarie Mwanasikana, a girls' rights organization.
Thank you so much, Marvelous.
We understand that the incidence of girl child abuse has risen in Zimbabwe. Can you just give us some statistics, what you're seeing on the ground?
There is quite a lot that has been happening and quite a lot that has been reported in terms of statistics of girls and women who have been sexually abused here in Zimbabwe. From April 2011 up until April, I think, 2014, there were about an estimated 7,000 women and girls who were raped. And then we have seen that these figures keep on increasing. And also, you might want to know that we have also seen this increase in numbers of girls being raped from the number of cases that we as Shamari and Anaskana have been receiving on a daily basis. Because on a daily basis, at our offices, we receive on average 3 cases or more of girls who are being sexually abused. So statistics keep on going up. They are not decreasing. And this is the current situation on the ground, and it's worrying.
What would you say has been the major driving force to this high incidence of especially girl child abuse?
I think there are quite a number of factors that have given rise to this increase in numbers of cases of sexual abuse. I would maybe highlight just a few. The issue of ignorance in the society, in the communities. I think people are failing to come up together as parents, in churches, traditional leaders, to come up together, respect the girl child, and accept that the Shona culture often says that when we have our girls in the society, they are not only one person's responsibility, it's everyone's responsibility to protect them. So we've seen quite a number of issues that are resulting in the increase in number of these cases. Maybe we also involve the issues of harmful religious and traditional practices that are also giving rise to these increases. We're also looking at issues to do with maybe most of the girls these days, because of HIV and AIDS, we are seeing that most of them are being left behind vulnerable because they are double orphans. And in that scenario, they then are staying with aunts and uncles who then take advantage of them, and they have no way to cry to. And also, other people who use the idea of witchcraft, virgins being said to cure AIDS. Actually, in other senses, we have fathers who are sexually abusing their own daughters, which is so sad. So I think there are quite a number of issues which are contributing to the increase in number of cases of sexual abuse, in particular rape.
When we look at the participation of the community at large, what should one do when they do find out that there is a child, may it be a girl or a boy, facing abuse?
They should quickly report to the nearest police station. And then if they know of any organization that protects children and children's rights, like Shamari and Anaskana, they should notify them, because most of them have got toll-free lines. They should also quickly report to the hospitals, because I've seen that most of the times these are being left behind. Yes, a case sometimes ends up being reported maybe after 2 weeks, when these girls are supposed to receive medical attention maybe within 24, 72 hours to prevent STIs, HIV, and which is not being done. So they should do that. And in these days also, the advantage being we also have church ambassadors that we are working with. They can also report to them, even community leaders that we're also working with and working with other organizations. They can also report to them so that the cases can be dealt with in time before evidence is lost.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Ekenia Chifamba, for having been our guest on the Women's Forum.
Thank you so much, Marvelous. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye.
Thanks, Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye. We hope you are going to have a wonderful weekend. Now to recap today's top stories. Road signs erected by ZANU-PF during its December 2014 Congress in Harare have been reportedly pulled down, with the Harare City Council professing ignorance on their removal. And some Zimbabweans living in exile in various countries are optimistic that one day they will go back home when the socio-economic and political situation improves. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Kande. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very, very very good weekend.